Pull up some questions and answers and see if there's anything I left out. Okay, so we have a question from the back. M&M. I like the kind with the peanuts. Yeah, well, there's always, if you look at culture and the kinds of culture, there's always been high culture and folk culture. You know, so in civilizations in the past, high culture was the exclusive property of wealthy people that had access to it. Without our iPods and such technological developments, if you wanted to listen to a concert of classical music, you had to be in the place where it was being played, and it wasn't necessarily being played for all the public all the time. If you think about, you know, Brandenburg Concertos, how many people in Germany got a chance to hear the Brandenburg Concertos? A very small number of people, because it was played in the context of a king's court, and perhaps occasionally in a concert hall, but it wasn't like the goal was to get 100% of the people of the population to come and listen to this music. So there's always a separation between high culture and more common people. But there's always folk culture. What has developed in America is a kind of popular culture. And that has, you know, I was trying to give some of the foundations of that as to how it developed. There's a technological dimension of it. And now we have the problem, I would say, within popular culture, is we have people that it's their job to try to make tens of millions of dollars off of creating pop cultural phenomena. So now, you know, you've got a series of producers and others that are trying to find the next hit, and that's been happening. And that really denigrates the quality of the sound, of the music, of the artistry, when what you're trying to do is just market for consumers and try to create a big division between parents and children and all this. So I'd say there's some benefits, you know, to the current context we're in. We have access to high culture, to high, say, classical music. Everyone in this room probably could easily listen to any piece of classical music that you wanted to simply by going, you know, online or Pandora Radio or iTunes or whatever. We have access to that, which we didn't have access to if you'd scrolled things back a couple hundred years ago. So now we have to fight some of the challenges associated with this other kind of culture, not folk culture, not high culture, but pop culture, which is largely an invention of people that are driving it for consumer purposes. So I think we have to fight that. I don't know if you want to redirect on that question. Those are just some thoughts that come to me about high culture, low culture, and classical music issues. Yeah. Okay. Any further thoughts? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, here's an example of an ancient Hebrew tune, and you can kind of hear that minor sound. Nematovu manaim shevet akim gam yachad. Nematovu manaim shevet akim gam yachad. Nematov. That sound is slightly kind of what we had associated with Israel music. It seems to be an ancient tune. But the kinds of stuff, you know, that we would hear typically, you know, Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me. That that sound is not ancient Hebrew music. That is not ancient Israeli music. That is music that developed out of the European Jewish folk tradition. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't have any kind of connection to anything ancient, but it's clearly not, most of the elements of it are not something that you could say, well, that's out of the Old Testament. That's what developed out of kind of Western history within the distinctly Jewish, Fiddler on the Roof stuff is really European, influenced by Jewish folk stuff. It's not ancient Hebrew, music. So that minor sound that you're talking about is more really out of that Western European tradition, as I understand the development of that music. Yes, sir. What the question is? Killing down by rivers. I don't know. I don't think I can answer that. I mean, the sound is influenced by ancient Celtic music a bit. Some of the instruments that came through were influenced by that kind of Celtic quality to it. But I don't know if I can speak to the lyrical tradition and what the songs were about. Back the way some of that music became popular was the Carter family went in the 40s and began, going around to all these places in the Bristol, Tennessee, Bristol, Virginia area and going back and, just kind of collecting a lot of the music that came out of that area. Then these songs went back, many years, and it was, again, that music that was influenced by Irish and Celtic music. And so there's a common kind of overlapping, and it developed into what we would call today, bluegrass and country music. So, but I don't know about the lyrical tradition much. Yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, this is it. Okay, last question. So I'd said, as far as the encouragements to do, let's stay more conservative musically in the church, but feel free at home and in the community life. What I mean by that, let me give a concrete example of that. So when we get together at church, this is what we're doing. This is a song thing in our church. But when we're going to, going out and just playing and having a party, an event like that, we're doing all kind of music. For example, this is old bluegrass song. But like, for example, this one, we did at a Pentecost celebration. We got a bunch of kids together and we learned a song right off the radio at the time, which was... I forget the name of the group now that does that, but maybe you know. So I mean by that, to do all kinds of fun stuff, even pop music, in festival, community celebration stuff. But in the church, don't try to, hey, let's push the envelope. We're going to do Hey Jude as the call to worship tomorrow. I tried to talk Eric into that. I just couldn't get him to go. Rob wanted it, but Eric was like, no way. Sort of trying to create an avant-garde culture in the music, in worship, I think, there's no good reason to do that. And especially if in your community celebrations, you can have a lot of fun and you can have some freedom on that. So you can play Beatles songs. We always do at Pentecost, we always do, you know, flew in from Miami Beach, B-O-A-C. You know, dedicate this to Blake Purcell. Flew in from Miami Beach. You know, that sort of stuff. You know, play Beatles songs, songs about plays, fun songs. I think Doug Wilson is known, and he and I have played this together a lot, you know, to... You know, I wouldn't dare think about that as appropriate for worship in Sunday morning. But when we're having a party, when we're having fun, we show people that, hey, you know, there's nothing... good stuff in the world, good music that's fun and fitting for that occasion is fine. You still have to make some judgments about that. We wouldn't do every song on radio, obviously, but we can do that. So at church, the goal is the music serves the liturgy. What kind of music serves the liturgy? Processional hymns, ascension hymns, certainly praise. We could probably do a lot better if we wrote some good new music that covered all the psalms, like the Kansas Christi doesn't have all the psalms covered. There's nothing wrong with writing new stuff for that purpose. I think that's something we need to do. Singing the psalms, getting back to psalms, and doing music from the Christian eras. We have music that's ancient music. We have an ancient chant for the Lord's Prayer, for example, right? You do, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed. I mean, that's an ancient tune. I was surprised. We had a dinner in Ukraine when I was there a couple of months ago, and there were four Catholic priests and one Greek Orthodox priest at this dinner of these Reformed men that had developed a relationship with these priests. And so we sang Ukrainian songs and things like this, and at some point they said, we want to sing to you our Lord's Prayer, what we do in the Catholic Church. And I said, okay. And they did, Our Father who art in heaven, you know, in Ukrainian. I was like, wow, that we sing that song too. That's ancient. That's great. We can do ancient music. We do music out of the Reformation. We do music out of all these different eras of the church. And so that's the kind of thing I mean. Try to use music that supports the liturgy, but in the community, let's enjoy all of the good things. And we have to talk about if there's some bad things. You know, there's some music we want to say is bad, and don't listen to it. But there's a lot of pop music that can be suitable for those occasions. And so if you want a song list, I'll give you a playlist or something. But there we go. So Eric says that's the last question, and so here we are.